We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. This is, as promised, the second part of our Southeast Division preview. Michael and I will be starting with the Atlanta Hawks. If you missed the first part, visit Bourbon Street Shots and take a look at the previous post. Thanks.
All right, okay. Who's next?
Next is the Atlanta Hawks. They also had a tumultuous offseason. Essentially, they let Al Horford, longtime Hawk, Mr. Hawks basketball, walk out the door, and they traded away Jeff Teague, and they waived some dude named Lamar Patterson, who I don't know who that is, but it was on this list, and I just felt I should mention it, because it's rare that I look at a name and say, I don't have any idea who that dude is.
Yeah.
I have no idea who Lamar Patterson is.
I feel like he was a second-round pick in the 40s range and went to, like, one of those schools with yellow in it. Sorry. I don't know why that's just all I thought of, but go ahead.
Okay. So then they added, they drafted DeAndre Bembry and Isaiah Cordenier. And they re-signed a whole bunch of people, Bazemore, Humphreys, and then their big gets where they went out and got Dwight Howard and Jarrett Jack. And then they also drafted essentially Tatarian Prince, but he was really, they traded D for the pick.
Yeah.
It became Prince. So they basically brought in, they scattershot three wing players to try to fill in for the next great Hawks wing that they seem to train up there all the time. And otherwise, they went and basically traded Dwight Howard in for Al Horford out.
Yeah. I look at this team, and I think Paul Millsap is, let's just say by the, I think there's a couple of things with superstar. I think superstar also implies marketability and something, yada yada, but I think just as far as performance on the court, Paul Millsap in certain stretches was pretty close to a superstar player.
Yeah,
I think by bringing in Dwight Howard, they're going to negate so many of the things that Paul Millsap does well, and especially the way he worked with Al Horford. I honestly think that if Dwight Howard plays up to his capabilities in a vacuum, he could be as good as Al Horford is just in a vacuum. But with this team specifically, and specifically Paul Millsap, I think that even if Dwight Howard is as good as Al Horford, he's gonna overlap and take away so much from Paul Millsap that it's going to be a huge net negative. I don't get how those two guys work together, especially after seeing Horford and Millsap play off each other so beautifully. Can you see any way that Paul Millsap is actually better this year with Howard than he was with Horford?
Unless you're going to do some sort of high-low thing where he's operating from the elbow and Dwight Howard's in the dunker spot, maybe. But I don't think he's going to be better. Like, I think the best you can hope for is he's almost as good. You're right. There's no way he's better. But like, some of me wants to say that I can see like the logic that comes out of this trade of Horford for Howard, essentially, other than the fact that really, it's a financial decision. They could get Dwight Howard for 3 years and he'll be the same age as Horford is, but Horford wanted 4 years. So they went for the shorter contract so that at the back end of it, it's not so odious. I honestly believe that's the reason why they made the choice they made. But as far as on the court, Schroeder, who's their new point guard, because Teague is gone. Schroeder's been their backup point guard for years. He's of the age where you basically say, this is where we got to see if he can handle it. Schroeder is not a genius when it comes to making the right basketball play all the time. And the Atlanta Hawks behind Teague ran a pretty smart basketball, like just the sets that Teague had to penetrate and then make the right play and get it to the right place. If you can convince Dwight Howard that he's a pick and roll player again, which is questionable, it's much easier to just say, run a pick and roll with Dwight Howard. And if he's open rolling to the basket, get it to him. Then run our complex sets and make the correct decision when you're hesitating with a guy on your back and you have four options. Who's the correct person to dump it to in this particular set? So I can see why you might want to do that since you're switching to the Schroeder. That's the best I can do.
Yeah, and like I could see a version of this team being okay. Like if you could swap out Paul Millsap for a true stretch four that doesn't do as many of the creative things and, you know,
say Ibaka?
No, like I'm talking about like what Rashard Lewis was for Dwight Howard.
Okay.
Back in the day, like a guy who's really a small forward.
Gotcha.
But, you know, we were able to play him at power forward. Like I could see that version of this team being good, and then you just put Schroeder and Dwight Howard in the pick and roll all day. You surround them with shooters and you have good enough defensive players like Bazemore. You put Korver on their worst perimeter player. Like, I could see that version of the team being good, but it's like they're stuck in between what that team was as a 60-win team where it was playing this really smart share-it basketball, and then, you know, they're also... You know what this feels like to me? Is it feels like that Phoenix Suns team when they traded for Shaq.
Hmm.
Like, you have both systems. You're still kind of this team that was move the ball, you know, but now you want to add a power aspect, and you think that ideally you'll have both, but really what you wind up having is neither
right. At
a high level. And it just, that this Dwight Howard to the Hawks move feels eerily similar to the Shaq to the Suns move.
Yeah. And in a lot of respects, Shaq was, his career was falling apart at that point. And Howard's career is falling apart at this point.
But
he's not a bad player. He's just, he still thinks he's a good player, and he's not.
Yeah. I still think he could in just a, but again, he doesn't want to run the pick and roll. He wants to post up. Yeah, so it's one of those things. I think one of the most underrated skills in professional athletes is self-awareness. I really think there's 25 guys in the league right now that could be Bruce Bowen if they wanted to. but they aren't self-aware enough, and they still think they could do more than that, so they're not willing to do that. I think you're right. I think his lack of self-awareness is probably holding him back more than his back or any number of injuries are.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's always most impressive about players like Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Like, Allen used to be a superstar, and just gracefully, he turned into an amazing role player.
God, that game six was on again today, and I watched it. What an amazing...
It's crazy. Oh. That's an amazing game.
Yeah.
The only other thing I wanted to mention about these, I don't know if you paid that much attention, Kyle Korver was not good last year.
No.
And I know he had an injury, but he's 36.
Yeah.
Is he done? Is it possible that he's just done?
I think their long-term plan, because at first I was like, why do you draft Prince and Bembry and then give Bazemore all that money? And I think that the plan is, I think Bazemore is going to be a shooting guard for years 2 through 4 of that contract, and then Prince will probably, or Bembry if he's out of schedule, but one of them moves up to small forward, and I think those draft picks and giving Bazemore that money is the clear sign in the transition that Korver's on his way out. But that's what I'm saying. Again, they're kind of holding on to the past combined with trying to add this different element. I mean, do you think, point blank, is Paul Millsap on this team March 1st?
Yes. I don't think they'll give up that quickly. I think they'll let the whole year ride, and then they'll make a move at the end of it.
Well, I mean, he's a free agent at the end of the... I mean, he could just leave.
Is he a free agent? I thought he had one more year.
I think it was a 3-year contract, but two was... I think only two...
Well, if this is his last year, then yes, he'll be gone. If they're not... If they're playing as well as I think they will, and I think they're going to be like a bubble playoff team. So
which unit do you think is better out of these, for the Hawks, the offense or the defense?
They actually played pretty well defensively. I think if the one thing Dwight Howard might actually be able to replace was Horford's defense, in some respects, he won't be as... I mean, like, Horford is amazing taking on guys who are in the pick and roll and picking them up, and Dwight isn't quite as good, but Dwight's also better at guarding guys just right around the rim and being a deterrent, I feel. So I think it's going to be a wash. So I think the defense, and last year their defense was very good, I think their defense is probably still going to be at the bottom end of the top 10. Offensively, oh, I don't know. I would probably say 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And I think Dwight's going to gum up the works. And I think Schroeder, like, as much as it's, you look at Teague and you're kind of like, he's not amazing, I think he's smart enough to run that in a way that Schroeder can't.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think, there were games where Schroeder would just come in. I mean, specifically in the playoffs, even he kept them alive. He reminds me a lot. If I had to project what he becomes, I would say what Reggie Jackson has become
okay.
In Detroit. Which Reggie Jackson could go off and have, you know, very explosive games, and you know, there were games where him and Drummond in the pick and roll was just unstoppable. So I think he could be that level of player. But yeah, I was right.
But would you even say Reggie Jackson is top 15 at the point guard position?
Yeah, I don't think that's really fair to Reggie Jackson. He's probably not a top 15 point guard, but it's just such a loaded position where if he was, quote unquote, a shooting guard on the NBA program, I would say he's definitely a top 10 shooting guard. So I think he's a needle mover regardless of the position he plays. So yeah, I think if Schroeder gets to that level, he'll be somebody that is on your scouting report that could change a game. So I think he could be that kind of player. I tend to agree. I think their defense is going to be above average. Offensively, I just I know it's kind of a cop-out, but I really think it comes down to, you know, how much Dwight Howard humbles himself. And I don't know. I could see, I mean, the culture in that organization is definitely better than it's been in his last two stops. I think we could agree with that.
True. Yep.
Wholeheartedly. We've seen, you know, we've seen a culture take a guy like Zach Randolph and kind of turn it around. Like, it's possible. It's not likely, but it's possible. But yeah, I think that this offense is going to struggle. I would say, I think they're going to be a top 7 or 8 defense, but I think their offense is going to hover right around league average.
Okay. So you're going to predict them for 47 wins?
Yeah, I would say 46, 47.
Okay. I was going to say 45, so. Okay.
Yeah. Is there any...
We got to play the game.
Uh-oh.
Second highest paid player on the Atlanta Hawks.
So I know...
I thought this was kind of easy, but...
Yeah, I mean, so Bazemore is at 17.5, so he's third. So then it's Dwight and Millsap. They got pretty similar deals, but I'll guess just because Dwight did his this year that he's first, so I'm going to say Millsap second.
That's correct, yep. Dwight has a $3 million advantage on Millsap.
Yeah. What did Jared Jack get from them?
Jack got the league minimum.
Wow. How quickly they fall. All right.
Well, he is coming off. He blew his knee out, so.
The real question here is, do you still believe in Mike Muscala?
I do. He's not a bad player.
Yeah.
Like, he is, I still feel that Mike Muscala would be a perfectly legitimate, elite fifth big man.
Okay.
All right, moving on to the Charlotte Hornets. And they had nowhere near the tumultuous offseason because most of what they were trying to do was just hold on to the guys they already had. So they did let Al Jefferson walk, who was their big get a few years ago, and now they were just like, yeah, see ya. Courtney Lee, who they traded for at midseason, Jeremy Lin, who was a dynamic third guard for them, they all left. And then they re-signed Batum and brought in Hibbert, the immortal Brian Roberts, Ramon Sessions, who you've talked about so much before, and they re-signed your favorite basketball player, Marvin Williams.
Traded the 22nd pick for Bellinelli, too.
They did. How could I have forgotten about
that?
It's
a random trade.
Yes, the 22nd pick for Marco Bellinelli, who had his worst year of his career in Sacramento, which is kind of like, that's just like a duh. You go to Sacramento, you're pretty much going to have your worst year, right?
Yeah.
And except unless you're Rudy Gay, who actually managed to have his best year in Sacramento because he's Rudy Gay.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist coming, I mean, basically that's an addition because
yep.
He didn't play, but...
Only a few games.
I mean, this is another, to me, just a weirdly constructed team. Like, what's the first thing, if you're looking at this roster, that just seems out of place to you, if anything?
That Batum and Kidd-Gilchrist are their wing players with Marvin Williams?
Yeah.
Like, in a league that has so many capable power forwards, you're going to go for Marvin Williams in a contract here. Because that's the thing I think is most funny. Like, haven't we seen this before? Marvin Williams in a contract year is pretty good. Every other year, he does not care about basketball. He doesn't give any effort. It's been every single season except for his contract years.
And the other thing that's so confusing to me is they basically turned down like 5 or 6 first-round picks just to keep Frank Kaminsky and not, like, what's his role? Like, what...
He's backup power forward.
Okay. Would you ever trade 6 first-round picks for a backup power forward?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so now basically you're sticking him behind Marvin Williams unless you think he could play some center. But, yeah, to me it's just – it's still Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I don't know – It's just got that feeling like he's never really going to make it on this team. Even if he gets healthy from here on out, it's just a weird fit. I don't really understand, you know, what the plan is. Maybe if you play him, Batum, and Williams together, Kid Gilchrist, you could act like he's the power forward essentially on offense.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's still, I don't know, it feels like he's never really going to make it there if he makes it at all. It's a weird fit.
I actually kind of like the ability. They basically built an amazing ability to switch almost every position except for point guard. Like, well, I guess even then, like, you have Batum, Kid Gilchrist are both capable of guarding point guards. So you could hide Kemba on their weakest perimeter threat, and then just let Batum and Kid Gilchrist and Williams switch between all the other spots, and you're going to have pretty solid defense. The strangest thing about this team, to me, in a lot of respects too, is just their bench is really, really thin. If I told you your bench was Sessions, Bellinelli, Jeremy Lamb, maybe, and then Kaminsky, Hawes, or Roy Hibbert, take your pick of those three. Does that feel like a strong bench to you? It feels pretty lame to me.
I mean, maybe in our eyes, but again, the cost that they paid. I mean,
that's
right. They gave up a first-round pick for Bellinelli. Like, they think that he's a quality player. I don't know. It depends, I guess, on what Kaminsky becomes, and Lamb had his stretches. But, yeah, there's nobody on there that where you're saying, okay, if the starter goes down, you have ultimate confidence in this person to come in. In that respect, if they were just bench players all year, I think it could be a middling bench, but none of these guys could step up and, you know, be starters where you feel like there's not a huge drop-off.
Okay, so I guess we need to get to the game. So we're talking Charlotte. Which player on this team is the second highest player? And I'll tell you right now, I would not have guessed this guy. This was not even on my radar when I was thinking about it.
All right, so I know Batum is the highest paid. So then my choices are Marvin, MKG, or Kemba. Kemba signed a while ago. MKG took a little bit of a discount, which actually might be an overpay now. So I'm going to go with Marvin Williams.
Okay. It is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And for some reason in my head, even though I know Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is on the same contract schedule as AD, and AD's making gobs of money now, I still think of him as like the young kid on it. I don't have the idea of him as like a 4-year veteran at this point. So,
I mean, games played wise, he's not, but
that's true.
How much did Marvin get? What's the difference?
Marvin got 12 and a quarter. Kid Gilchrist is at 13.
Oh, okay.
Kemba's at 12. So, he's got a reasonable contract.
Yeah. Yeah, and considering all the money that was thrown around, you could even argue that Marvin Williams maybe took a little bit of a hometown discount.
Oh. So I remember when he was in Utah and you watched him a bunch. You were really not a fan of his game. Am I being unfair by saying this is contract year Marvin Williams? Or
maybe, but the other part of me wonders if he was the 22nd pick as opposed to the second in a year that had Chris Paul, like if he would have gotten as bashed as he has throughout his career, and then if we would have been as skeptical about a good year or two. Like, I think it kind of goes both ways with him, because as a 22nd overall pick or even 14th overall pick, he's had a pretty nice career. It's not his fault he was taken ahead of Chris Paul.
That's true. And Darren Williams.
And Andrew Bynum.
Man, that's such a... Talk about a flame out. Wow.
Not on the PBA tour.
Okay.
It's gonna be he's gonna be a big time bowler. You heard it here first.
All right, so then let's make our predictions for offense and defense this team. Do you think that Kemba Walker, Batum, Gilchrist, Williams, and Zeller a great defense makes or great offense makes?
I think a good defense because of the coach when you combine it all together. So I'd say a defense somewhere between 9 and 12, an offense somewhere between 17 and 20.
Okay, that's kind of right where I'm thinking. I actually think their offense is going to fall off a little bit because Jeremy Lin, as maligned as he's been for some reason, he was actually a really good secondary attacker for them for a long time last year. So him not being there, I don't think Sessions and Bellinelli are going to come even close to being able to do that often. As much as we all love Brian Roberts, he's not the answer. So I'm actually going to put their offense down around 25.
What about Kaminsky? A year ago, you would have traded Ryan Anderson for Kaminsky. Well, how do you feel about him moving forward?
I think he's still got a chance to be a solid power forward.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why I was trading Ryan Anderson for Kaminsky, though, was because of salary purposes.
Man, Ryan Anderson's talked a lot of shit about us since we left. I'm losing a lot of respect for a guy whose side we stuck by for a long time through a lot of stuff to go out and start talking crap on a team that I hate.
And I got to say, like, I mean, wow, I'm not even going to say it. Never mind. He's quickly turning into a player that I can't wait to play the Rockets against. I hope we shut his ass down. I really do.
If he's even playing, yeah.
Like, really, right? Oh, it's weird.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
Let's go on to...
We're about the same numbers then, right? Probably a 39 to 43 win team somewhere.
Yeah, and it's... I mean, they won 48 last year.
Oh.
But... Uh-oh, I brought up what they did last year.
So their roster moves are going to make them 6 to 8 games worse?
Yeah, crazy.
I'm surprised. I didn't even know they won 48 last year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, anyways. Let's talk the Eastern Conference really sad team. This is like, I just feel bad for this crew. The Washington Wizards.
Mm.
How would you like to be a Washington Wizards fan, and for years, their plan has been, we're going after Durant, and then they essentially have an awful season, they bring in nothing super exciting, and then you hear, like, the very first thing that comes out this summer that has anything to do with the Wizards is basically John Wall and Bradley Beal talking about how they don't get along.
Yeah.
After they paid Bradley Beal gobs of money.
Yeah, it's an interesting team because I can't see them being bad enough to be how bad they're going to need to be to get another piece. And, yeah, you give Bradley Beal a ton of money. John Wall's already not happy with his contract when he sees how much inferior guards have gotten, let alone the guy right next to him. But, I mean, there's a lot of little pieces that I like and I'm interested in. I just, it all amounts to nothing in the end game. But I'm interested to see if Trey Burke could, and this is damning somebody with faint praise, but have kind of like an Austin Rivers-ish resurgence where, you know, he goes somewhere else. He's just a backup guard, so... not much is expected of him, and he becomes a solid rotation NBA player. Andrew Nicholson was one of my favorite free agents of this year, and especially on a team that spreads it out with John Wall, gets his big men more open threes than probably any other point guard. Has Jay Smitty there. Like, there's a lot of, you know, Marcus Thornton. I mean, this is Pelicans throwback. Otto Porter, you know, is he going to make a leap if Markieff Morris has all the talent in the world if he keeps his head on straight? Like, there's so many little fun, interesting pieces and possible storylines But even if everything breaks kind of right, there's still a, fourth, fifth seed. And even if everything breaks wrong, they're not going to be bad enough to be getting one of the elite players. So it's just like, why even care?
Right. So let me ask you this question. Bradley Beal, they maxed him. Would you have done that if you had control of the Wizards for that period of time? Would you have extended Bradley Beal with a maximum contract? Because that's what it would have taken to keep him. So.
Or what? I mean, what would have happened if you... So play out the scenario for me where you don't give him the max.
You let him walk to another team who offers it. I mean, he was a restricted free agent.
Okay.
So if somebody else comes in, maxes him out, you let him walk, and... You would have space because they also brought in Mahimi. They spent a lot of money to do that. They traded for Burke. They signed Satoransky. They brought in Jason Smith for a reasonable and Nicholson for a reasonable contract. They had a bunch of money if they had let Beal kind of walk away that they probably could have put into something else. I'm not saying there's anything out there that's great, that's better than Beal necessarily, but would, like, they had to max him out. This is a guy who is injured all the time. He is Eric Gordon level of injury risk.
Yeah, if they were to play next season 100 times, 50 of them they have Bradley Beal, 50 of them they have the same exact team, but they have Etuan Moore instead. What would have been the difference in average wins in each of those 50 different worlds?
Well, just because Beal misses half the season every single year, I don't know if it's that different.
And I think that's the conclusion I would reach, so I think you pretty much would have my answer. I see, my thing is where I think people, and this is in every business, get into trouble is they say, we can't lose this guy. So then they overpay them. I always try to look at it as Bradley Beal has never been on my team. Etuan Moore has never been on my team. These are the market, you know, and then this would be my projection moving forward with each of these guys. Okay, Etuan Moore is definitely the better value, but where I think people get into trouble is they think about losing something that they currently have rather than just thinking of the two options outside of which one has been here in the past and which one hasn't. And the only argument that you could use against my logic is to say, yeah, but there's things like chemistry and, you know, time and building to get. But you don't even have that with Bradley Beal because your star already says they don't get along. Plus, he hasn't played long enough to really have built a chemistry or a cohesiveness with all the other guys. So that goes out the window. So that's a long way of saying, no, I wouldn't have done this if I was the Wizards. And you know what really cracks me up is looking way, way back, they could have had James Harden for Bradley Beal.
All right.
And I mean, like, and that's another sunk cost thing is they're probably thinking, oh man, we valued him so much then, and now we're just going to let a guy, no, we can't let him walk. We got to try to salvage this. And you just keep pouring resources into something that's never going to return what you want it to, but you're too chicken poop to let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is this decision would have mattered to me if they were at the cap. Like, if they were at the cap and they could sign Etuan Moore, who actually got played more than the mid-level, so that wouldn't have been an option. If you're picking between a mid-level guy and Bradley Beal, and it's really just it's toy money because you're it's over the cap. You're not going to be able to spend that money on someone else if you don't use it. I would consider Bradley Beal in that situation a little more heavily, but they weren't. They could have easily they put their entire team together to clear max room to get Kevin Durant and then be able to re-sign Bradley Beal. So they had full max room.
And the other thing I don't get is the Jan Mahinmi signing. I don't have the money in front of me, but didn't they give him some decent money?
They gave him a very nice contract.
So this is the thing for me, is you've got guys in Porter and Oubre that as this league is going where it's going, could both play the small ball four, or I actually like what Dell called it at Media Day the other day. He called it the mobile four. I like that a little better. But they could both go that way. You got Markieff Morris, you got Andrew Nicholson, who you just signed. And, you know, I could actually see them pushing and having lineups. I wouldn't be totally shocked if they had a closing lineup where Markieff Morris was at the five. And you got Gartaud, who's got big money. You got Jason Smith, who you got as kind of like your elite fifth bit. I just don't understand why you signed Jan Mahinmi to that contract, where I think the best version of this team is John Wall and four shooters around him, and you have big men who could play that mobile four and then a small five. I didn't get that signing at all.
Yeah, the weirdest part about it wasn't just, like, if this is the last season of Gortat, I can see paying Mahinmi that money, because you think this will be the last season Gortat's playing with you. Maybe you can get a discount next year as he comes back as a backup center, so you get your next center of the future right now because he's on the market and you value that guy, because Mahinmi is a pretty solid center. But Gortat's got two more years after this one. They have three more years of Gortat, and now they have 4 years of Mahinmi.
Yeah.
Unless they think they can trade Gortat for something at some point.
And what, didn't they give Andrew Nicholson multiple years?
They gave him 3 years of the player option for the fourth.
So I think, yeah, it was like 4/28, right? And
yep.
Then Markieff Morris, I know, has 3 years left on it. Oubre, I think, is destined to be a mobile or small ball four. Like that.
You think he's a four?
I think he's a mobile four, yeah. I don't think he's going to ever be a pure three. So to me, if a guy isn't a pure three as far as the guy, to me, a pure three could handle the ball, could shoot the ball, could pass the ball. Like, I mean, if he's not a pure three, then he's going to play some minutes at the four. So, I mean, you have all that. That's just the one I really didn't get from them. But what about, I mean...
Well, they also gave Jason Smith 3 years in the last year a player option.
Yeah.
What?
I mean... See, that one I could kind of understand. I think Jason Smith is going to be Scott Brooks' Nick Collison.
Okay.
I think he's going to be the kind of the veteran, you know, off the court, the guy who brings everybody together, the guy who, you know, does all the dirty work in practice and occasionally in the game. So, like, I could kind of get that. Like, I kind of get this roster if you just take out Jan Mahinmi. So, if you were to take out Jan Mahinmi and Bradley Beal, put their money together, what am I looking at for this upcoming season? About 25 to 30, or how much could I have spent?
Close to $40 million.
So now I go and I do a Pelicans-type thing where instead I go out and I get Etuan Moore, I go out and get, maybe a back. I mean, I go get Etuan Moore, Langston Galloway, and I take a shot on Terrence Jones and maybe one other guy. Like, this team would make a lot more sense to me, both short-term and long-term, if they had done something like that. I wouldn't have done what they did.
Or even if they just, instead of taking Jan Mahinmi, gave that money to Lil Deng.
Yeah. See, to me, I think Porter and Oubre both have some potential. I don't want to step on their minutes at all.
Yeah, okay. I would prefer that to Jan Mahinmi. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, but I mean, if my backup guards were Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore right now, I don't know. I'd feel better both long-term and short-term. I have some defensive options.
I should do this really quick because I didn't do this like I did with the last one. Their projected starting lineup, by the way, is Wall, Beal, Otto Porter Jr., Markieff Morris, Gortat. Their backups are Trey Burke, Thornton, Oubre, Jason Smith, and Mahinmi. You know what, the one little moment that made me giggle the most when I was looking at this team, like, on various websites? ESPN's backup shooting guard, second string backup shooting guard, isn't Marcus Thornton, he's third. Their second shooting guard is Jarrell Eddy. Who's Jarrell Eddy?
I think if you ever watched that TV show Dinosaurs, I think he was the son.
What?
You never watched that show on ABC, Dinosaurs?
No.
Oh, it was glorious. It was,
wait, is that the they were kind of they're kind of like Muppets?
Yeah, but they were huge. It was a sitcom of like dinosaurs and like the father was like a blue collar working guy, whatever. But I think the son's name in that show was Jarrell Eddy. I don't know. You'll have to double check that.
I cannot believe you even remember that show.
Oh, you kidding? That show was fantastic.
So Jarrell Eddy played 26 games for them last season, 5 minutes a game. He shot 30.8% from the field.
Yeah. I'm not counting on that. I actually like McClellan out of Miami. I know he was a guy that a couple of people in the Pels organization had half of an eye on, and he's a really athletic guy who could shoot. I would keep my eye on him, but I'm not in love. Just remember, just a year ago, this was a team that just dumped Ish Smith. They literally just, he was the 16th guy. He didn't make the cut. Just gave him away.
To be fair, it's probably going to be Satoransky, who came over from Europe this year.
Yeah.
I think he was picked 3 years ago by them, or 2012, I think. And he's decent, so he'll probably be that.
But what would you guess is the finishing five for this team? So the definites would probably be Wall, Beal, and Morris, right?
Yeah. I think it's got to be still, I guess I would pick their starting five as their best five.
See, I could really see, it's Scotty Brooks, so you're right. But if it was a more creative coach, I would really like Nicholson and Morris to finish games together. I think that would be a very hard team to defend with those five. And I think Morris is tough enough, and most teams don't play a traditional five at the end of the games. Like, yeah, if you're playing Detroit, you might not be able to get away with that, but most teams, I think you could get away with that as a finishing five, and it would be pretty impressive.
Yeah. You got a lot more faith in Nicholson than I do.
I do with John Wall. I mean, that guy gets his players year after year. I mean, remember how good Trevor Ariza was with John Wall?
Yeah.
He gets guys wide open looks. That's more of a reason than anything. I wouldn't. Andrew Nicholson running the pick and roll with Trey Burke is going to be a nightmare, but space him on the floor with John Wall and I'd have some faith.
I will say that one of my secret fantasies that I've always had was if there was some way you could team up Wall with Davis, like that would be unbelievably fantastic in my opinion. But every time you think about it, there's no way Washington is ever moving Wall for anything, period. He's their Davis. I mean, you can't let that guy go unless you're finally ready to blow everything up.
Yeah.
And they're not even close to that. They won't consider it, and neither will the Pelicans. So.
Yeah, there's a dream for 2-3 years from now.
That's right. Okay. So here's the you seem to know a lot about their roster. And their salaries, but I'm going to play the game anyways. Who is second highest player on the Washington Wizards paid?
It has to be John Wall.
Yeah, okay. That was easy. Who do you think how do you think third
is? Third would be more interesting. It's between... Oh, no, Morris got a really cheap deal. So it's between Gortat and Mahimney. Yeah, as you heard, I didn't know what Mahimney got, but you seem surprised by it, so I'm going to go Mahimney.
Yeah, I've actually seen two different estimates from it, but it's somewhere between $16 and $18 million.
Oh my God, a year?
A year.
Wow.
4 years, $16 to $18 a year.
Oh.
And
Biombo got that man paid, because Biombo got himself paid, but I think in doing that, team said who's Biombo like, and I think Mahinmi was the second guy in this market.
Except that Mahimi's 29.
Oh, yeah. I'm just talking about what he could. I think Biombo showed having a guy like that come off your bench could be a key part of being a winning team, and I think people now want to try to emulate that. But, yeah, I can't believe Mahimi got. That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
Market, and I think they just had the "we have money burning the hole in my pocket" list thrown at this dude.
Yeah,
because even when they signed him, it wasn't like there was five teams on the market clamoring for a center.
Yeah, because that's true. Because now I'm remembering that like the first rumor of free agency was that Washington was going to give Noah like 22 to 25 million.
Right.
And everybody.
And I think they just like, okay, well, we can't give Noah 22 million now. Who's next on our list? Me. We'll take off 2 million and throw it at him.
Ugh.
It's like, what?
That's sickening. So he's almost making what John Wall's making.
He's making more than what John Wall's making over the course of the next 4 years, because the total contract is more than John Wall's.
That's gross.
And John Wall, we already know, is sensitive to this. Like, that's got to piss him off. Because when, what's his name, up in Detroit, how am I having a mind blank? Jackson, Reggie Jackson. When he got his deal, John Wall's like, now I'm making less than Reggie Jackson?
Yeah, that's gross.
and then he fired his agent. So.
Real quickly, I think we've learned more, at least I have, listening to Woj's podcast with Sam Presti. I think we've learned more about Scott Brooks since he left, mostly that he wasn't as incompetent as the internet made him out to be. Westbrook and Durant just weren't as willing to stagger as he would have liked them to. And Kendrick Perkins had a big overall influence that, you know, it was really hard to pull him out, even though the analytics and matchups dictate. I think Scott Brooks, in retrospect, was a better coach than the internet made him out to be. Do you think he's going to have a positive, negative effect in any way over, let's just take a league average coach and have him coach the Wizards or even the hot flaming piece of trash they had last year? You think Brooks makes a positive impact anywhere, and if so, specifically, in what parts of this team?
So I think Brooks has been proven to be able to manage personalities pretty well, and it feels like there are some – well, it doesn't even feel that. Markieff Morris is on this team. John Wall is not an easy person to get along with from almost everything I've seen. Bradley Beal obviously doesn't get along with the guy. So I have a feeling that Brooks will be able to mitigate that somewhat. But as far as, like, is he better than an average NBA coach? I don't think so. And that's not, like, a real big knock. Like, well, there's nothing wrong with being an average NBA coach. There's, like, maybe four or five coaches that really actually have a major impact, and it's because there are three or four innovators in any field, and everybody else just kind of follows afterwards. It's just how things work.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think that normally he would have a decent defensive impact on a team, but I don't know if he has the horses here to pull it off. It feels a little bit like Darren Erman when he came last year and saying all the right things and trying to do all the right things, but just didn't have the horses. I don't know, other than Mahimney on this team, who's just a dog on the defensive end and willing to sacrifice and get down and get a stop on that end.
So before we wrap this up, I do, and make our predictions, I do want to ask you one question. I have read multiple articles, multiple evaluations of Jared Dudley, and all of them kind of kill him for his defense. Like, they act like he's too slow to defend anybody, that he's not a good defensive player, he can't help anybody. I have very distinct memories of the Washington Wizards using Jared Dudley to literally shut down Anthony Davis. And it wasn't that they were letting the ball reach Anthony Davis and then Davis couldn't score on Dudley. They just made it. Jared Dudley worked like a dog that game, all game long, to just completely deny Davis the ball. Like, and the Pelicans just, they were flummoxed. They could not figure a way to get the ball past Jared Dudley to Anthony Davis, which says something about the intelligence of the Pelicans, but it also says something about how hard Jared Dudley works. And he's also got positive numbers defensively if you look at, like, RPM and stuff like that. So I have a feeling that they're going to actually miss Jared Dudley pretty significantly on this team. Their calling card was defense. That's what made them not suck. And Do you think Otto Porter is going to do that?
No, and I mean that's another thing is people notice a lot of the flash plays, and I'm sure there's plenty of times Jared Dudley just got, you know, absolutely burned, and some 24-year-old athletic wing guy blew right by him and dunked on him, and everybody said Jared Dudley's a terrible defender. But there's 60 other plays during the course of a game where he probably did something intelligent that prevented, you know, something from happening or made scoring a lot harder. So I tend to agree with you. I mean, he had that. He wanted to do that. I totally agree with Jeff Van Gundy that most of defenses want to, and he wanted to. I don't, again, I'm looking at this roster, and I don't see a guy who I feel like wants to make his bones on the defensive end and wants to get a stop. And I see a bunch of guys who pride themselves on the best part of their games being offense. I mean, you would definitely say that about John Wall, Trey Burke, Bradley Beal, Marcus Thornton, Otto Porter, Oubre. You would say that about Morris. You would say that about Nicholson. You would say that about Gortat. Like I said, literally the only guy in the rotation, you would say that about Satoransky. The only guy possibly in the rotation you wouldn't say that about is Mahinmi. So that's what scares me most about this team.
Okay. Well, with that said, I'm going to make my predictions first this time. So they were a good defensive team last year. They were a pretty poor offensive team. I think their defense falls to average. I think their offense is like an 18th, 19th thing. I really think they're going to be below average in both, which means I'm betting on this team only going to be somewhere in like the 32 wins.
Wow.
I really think they're going to crash and burn this season.
Yeah, I think their offense is going to be average and their defense is going to fall big time to like that 2022 range. So yeah, I see 35 to 37 wins, little better than you, but this is a team that if John Wall has a major, major injury, you know, there's a couple teams like this where if one guy goes down, you're talking about going from a possible 500 team to a team that could be in the conversation for a top 3 to 5 pick.
Wow. Maybe that'll make John Wall available. I can hope, right?
Yeah, but again,
do we have the horses to get him?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like, hey, if a guy becomes available, you've got to beat 28 other teams' offers, and this Pelicans team does not have the assets to get anybody.
If Wall's available, is anyone beating the offer Boston is putting on the table?
I don't know if Boston goes after him. I mean, I'm guessing they would. I think another team that nobody's talking about. No, I'm just kidding. I think another team that once, you know, if guys start to become available that has a ton of assets is the Denver Nuggets. They just have so many young players. They have the contracts to make everything work. They could send veterans to other teams for more young players and pick, whatever. But there's several teams like that out there to where if a high-level guy becomes available, the Pelicans will have no shot. So really what you've got to be in the market for is a mid-level guy who other teams really don't want.
Can you imagine John Wall taking on opponents in Denver, Mile High Denver?
Mm.
Like, he would just torch people.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. It'd be fun.
And they could, I mean, you're right, they could easily put a package together. Like, would they say no to a Nurkic Jamal Murray package with a draft pick thrown in?
I mean, if I'm Denver, I'm giving up Moutier because Moutier and Wall can't play together. But yeah, I love Moutier. So yeah, a Moutier and a couple other things and picks. Yeah, I like I said, look at an offer like that, the Pelicans can't touch it.
Okay. All right. So I think that is the entire. And now I forgot the division we're even talking about. Southeast Division.
Did we talk about the Heat?
We didn't talk about the Heat.
Look at you.
Did we skip the Heat?
Look at you.
I'm trying to get past, like, the Heat are so sad. I just said that about the Wizards, but now, actually, after the news that came out, I think the Heat might be a little more sad. Do you disagree with that? So the news is Bosch is probably done. Like, I don't think there's any way you can look at that.
I think it's so much more complex than that. I think if Chris Bosh, I think Chris Bosh would be passed by a physical for at least 20 to 25 other teams. I think it will be revealed long term that the Heat are doing some shady, shady stuff
to get out of that contract. Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be that surprising to me. But I don't know. It's still really, he's had it happen to him two different seasons now, and he's missed significant portions of each of those seasons. So even, let's say, he can be cleared by another team, do you have any expectation that he's going to be that healthy or that a major contributor for any team going forward?
I mean, he was on Bill Simmons' show on HBO. He's keeping in great shape. Like, the latest twist to this is he actually just fired his agent today, his representative. So maybe they're in cahoots in some way or whatever. But in all honesty, you know, I would call today and ask the Heat if they had any interest in a Tyreek Evans and Omer Asik for Chris Bosh swap, and I would roll the dice. I would totally do it. The Heat, you know, could get some insurance money from Tyreek or maybe get some time out of whatever. I don't know if they would be interested, but I would at least be calling. But I think that Chris Bosh can play again. I just don't know if he's gonna, because the Heat are holding all the cards here. But something just doesn't feel right to me about it. And to me, that's more sad, you know, than anything else. It's just that maybe this guy can never play again, but for some reason him and even some of his own doctors don't agree with that conclusion, so I don't really understand what's going on. But, yeah, let's just go into this preview assuming that they're not going to have Bosh, but they will have another lefty bomber in Luke Babbitt, so I don't really know if there's much of a difference.
Right. So, essentially, they lost Dwayne Wade. They probably lost Chris Bosh. They re-signed a couple of their own players to pretty large contracts in Whiteside and Richardson. And they brought in a bunch of meh players and Deion Waiters and Wayne Ellington and Luke Babbitt. And I guess they got James Johnson, who can be okay. Derek Williams. They brought in a bunch of guys who are okay. But really, they did also bring in Beno. They brought Beno Udrah back over, so he'll tear us apart when we play them. But really, this has become the Goran Dragic show, and the Is Justice Winslow Going to Turn Into Something show. Yeah. Like, that's really what they have left, isn't it? Like, Whiteside's a fine player, but I don't think he's a major impact player. Do you?
I mean, they're paying Tyler Johnson $12.5 million to do something. I don't know. Maybe he's selling timeshares in Miami. I don't know what he's doing, but they're giving him a ton of money to do something.
Well, they gave him all that money because Brooklyn tried to steal him.
Yeah, but, I mean, so two teams think this guy's worth $50 million? I don't know. I don't even know what a Briante Weber is. I don't even know that's a real human being. One under the radar guy I liked, and it was a guy I wanted the Pelicans to go after, was Willie Reed. I think, you know, he's solid. Deion Waiters, theoretically, he's with the right franchise if he wants to get his head together, but in the wrong situation because they're not going to have enough scores, so he's going to start chucking. I actually think this would have been the right situation for him if the Heat were still a very good team and he could just be a small contributor to it. But I totally envision games where, especially once one or two guys get hurt, he's throwing up 20, 25 shots and trying to get his next contract, which is going to be a nightmare. I think this is a huge mess and a little bit of foreshadowing and, you know, the predictive powers of the game. I've played through two different seasons and then, well, simulated through two different seasons in NBA 2K17. In both seasons, the Miami Heat got the number one overall pick.
Well, you know, they have tanked before. Yeah. Like, that's how they got Dwayne Wade. Yeah. And, you know, Riley is a shady dude. Like, there's not really any question about that. He's a successful dude, but he's a shady dude, too. Like, he stabbed Stan Van Gundy in the back so quick. It was ridiculous when he had a chance to win a championship as a coach.
Yeah.
So
I got two questions for you, both about last year's rookies.
Okay.
One, do you think Josh Richardson was actually a good player, or he was a fifth best player on the court on a really good team? Teams paid no attention to him, and also because he had such a small usage, he was able to concentrate on the defensive end and overachieve there.
My entire take on Richardson is he's just a shooter. I mean, he's got some athletic gifts, but if he turned out to have a better career than Anthony Morrow, I would be pretty surprised.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I gave away my answer because the second one was such a longer option, but I just think there's these opportunities. The other guy who feels this way to me is Norman Powell from Toronto. This is what I'm talking about where you get drafted and how you are perceived.
I saw Powell do some things, though, that were pretty decent.
I understand, but if he would have went to the Kings and been the same player, he wouldn't have had success.
That's probably true.
These guys get to go into these situations where, you know, not much is expected of them. They are not on the other team's scouting report. Everything that they give offensively is gravy, and they're able to just concentrate on one thing and then lock in on defense and just do that. And all of a sudden, it's, oh, this guy's better than expected, and yada, yada. But now Josh Richardson isn't going to do that. He's going to be asked to do more, and all of a sudden, he's going to have a sophomore slump and yada, yada. I don't think he's really a good player. I think he was the benefit of very good circumstances that are no longer there.
Well, then here's the bigger question. His numbers don't look too much different from Justice Winslow's.
Yeah.
Winslow's a better rebounder. We'll give him that. But other than that, do you think Winslow is in the same boat?
No.
You think he's a blue-chip stock that'll get better?
So, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you, is if you had to bet your life right now, does Justice Winslow ever make an all-star team?
No.
And what do you think's going to hold up? Would you agree that he has the potential to be a top, top-tier defensive player?
I think he could be a very nice 3-and-D player and top out at, you know, 12 points a game.
So maybe like a Damari Carroll type of career?
Yeah, something like that. I think he'll be better at the front end of it than Damari Carroll ever was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's probably more because he'll have opportunities that Damari Carroll never had. Like, Justice Winslow is going to get every minute he can stand this year.
Yeah, I think the thing with Winslow is that he was a very good 3-point shooter for a very small sample size, and then that was projected when the larger body of work said he wasn't. I think he's going to be a very good defender. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to create for himself. If
he's Shane Battier, is that I think that might be a good comparison to me for me.
Yeah, I could actually see that. Who do you think has the better career, Stanley Johnson or Justice Winslow?
Stanley Johnson.
Interesting. I mean, this team, and then what do you think is going to happen now with Hassan Whiteside having all this money, being the number one or number two option on a team, being probably the biggest name, there will be, as far as current Heat players, when you look around the arena, he'll have the most jerseys in the stands, right?
I don't know. Dragic has the potential to get there.
Really?
He didn't play. Dragic didn't play super well last year, but if Dragic has the ball in his hands all the time, he could become pretty, pretty big, you know, as a fan favorite there, I think.
Huh. Yeah.
But, how do you get, like, what is it that Whiteside does that you get behind? I guess block shots, right? I guess is that it?
Yeah, I mean, the rebound, I mean, he's a guy, he's one of maybe three guys in the league who could put up a triple-double with blocks. He's one of maybe 5 to 8 guys in the league who you wouldn't be surprised to see put up a 20-20 and could even put up multiples. Like, he's going to get his stats, but I've never seen him in a game where I ever felt that he was really impacting the game the way that his numbers said that he was. Never really got that feeling from him watching him, so... I could see a lot of empty stats from him this year, which they're going to need.
Yeah. All right. So let me ask you the one follow-up question, though, because Whiteside has had a history of not having his head screwed on right, like making really bad decisions and just generally not following along with what like the coach wants. Who is more likely to be on the Miami Heat next year? Whiteside or Spoelstra? Because there's going to be conflict between these two dudes. I guarantee.
If that happens, though, they would choose Spoelstra. The only way I could see Spoelstra leaving, which is why I didn't immediately answer, is because I could imagine a Doc Rivers situation with Spoelstra. To where he's done the rebuilding thing before, whatever. He's a coach that likes to be in the championship hunt. So I could see him, you know, preferring to be in a situation like that, similar to when Doc left. But so that's the only way I could see Spoelstra leaving. But they are not going to choose Whiteside over Spoelstra.
You don't think so?
No, no way.
Okay.
Now, that organization is about the culture of that organization. It wants to get back into free agent pitches, and, you know, I think it thinks it has a shot at Westbrook in 2 years and, you know, has a shot at this guy and that guy. They're going to want to keep their culture and those people in that building, and they're going to want to bring Riley and Spoelstra to a meeting and yada, yada, yada. So.
Okay. All right. So we kind of have given some feeling about what we think. So offensive, defensive, I actually, I'll go first this time. I think their defense is going to be decent still. Like, I mean, it's not going to be awful. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 11th, 12th. I think their offense will probably be around 20.
Yeah.
So I'm giving them a 35-win season?
Yeah, I'm thinking that their offense is going to be... There's another loss that they had that is going to be under the radar, but it's David Fizdale, who I think was one of the best assistant coaches in the NBA, and he was really a guy that was a player developmental guy. He was a guy that was close to and helped Whiteside. I think that's one that is going to hurt them a little bit. I think that their offense is going to be in the 20 to 22 range, and I think their defense could be 25 to 28.
Wow, okay.
I think it could be really bad.
Wow, all right.
Again, I'm doing all this with Bosch just completely out. And not playing again. So I think it could be that bad for the reason, like I said, Josh Richardson is this defensive surprise and stud and yada, yada, yada. But again, he was only concentrating on one thing. Winslow, he had Deng and Wade taking the offensive load, and now all of a sudden he's going to have to create more, so not as much energy on the defensive end. So I think they're going to be bad. I think this is a 24 to 28 win team.
Okay. Then we play two games here. First one is the normal one. Who is the second highest paid player on this team?
Whiteside?
It's Whiteside. Yeah, Bosch is still making a little more than Whiteside. And Dragic is $7 million under.
Yeah.
So it's not even close. And then what is the chances that by the end of the season, Chris Bosh will have filed a lawsuit against the Miami Heat and the NBA Players Association will also be filing a grievance in his favor.
So I think I'm going to be kind of what is your body temperature supposed to be? 98.6%.
Yes,
that's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Just because it's somewhat of a medical thing, but also because I think it's that high.
Okay. All right. So now we finish this.
Who do you think plays more minutes, Luke Babbitt or Josh Roberts? That's the question everybody wants to know.
Luke Babbitt.
All right.
Mick Roberts has been hurt for what, 2 straight years? Like, I don't expect that guy to play a minute.
Okay.
And Babbitt could easily get 500 to 1,000 minutes for this team.
Hmm. Gosh, such is life. Yeah, this is gonna be a bad team.
Okay. All right, so thanks for listening to In the Know. And we're actually going to be coming right back pretty soon with a take. We're doing Pacific Division next, right?
Aloha.
There's no Hawaiian tea.
Not yet.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.